Crawford Long, a dapper man in a business suit and silk vest, introduced himself to Smoke at 9 o'clock sharp down at the shipping yards, while Pearlie and Cal kept an uneasy watch in all directions from a top rail of a corral fence, rifles resting on their laps.
Pleased to meet you, Jensen. These are top-notch cattle. I come to Dodge City early every year to get my pick of what comes in. I'm with Chicago Beef Company, and I can assure you I'll pay top prices for your steers.
And how much might that be?
An ordinary longhorn in good flesh fetches $8 or $9 a head. I'll double that for this bunch. How many have you got?
307. That's what's in the rail yard tally book.
I'll stick my neck out and pay $18 apiece.
I'm holding out for 20, but I appreciate your offer. I'll show them to a couple more buyers, and if your offer is tops, then I'll sell to you. On the way down here, I was guessing they'd bring 25 a head. It's choice beef, and any experienced cattleman can see that. Not much waste on a carcass.
I'll pay 20 then. That comes to $6,180 by my calculations.
Sounds right to me, Mr. Long.
Well, then we'll shake hands on it, and our bargain is sealed. As soon as the cattleman's bank opens, we'll go draw you money. I'll write out a bill of sale while we're at the bank. Sheldon Herring, the bank president, is a friend of mine. We can use his office to finish our business. I come here every year since the rail spur was built. I'll start arranging for cattle cars right away. I'd like to get these cows to Chicago as quickly as I can.
Smoke shook with Long, thinking how pleased Sally would be when she heard the news. Their Hereford crosses had more than doubled their income from beef production over previous years.
It's done then. We've got a deal at 20 per head.
It's a pleasure doing business with you, Jensen. I'll meet you in front of the bank at 10. In the meantime, I'll check with the yard foreman to get cars ready for the 3 o'clock train back east. The locomotive gets here at noon, usually. Then it takes time to make that turnaround and fill the boiler. After you pocket your money, the yard foreman can start pulling empty cattle cars to the loading chutes with teams of mules. See you at the bank, Jensen.
That's one fine price for a batch of steers, boss. Sure don't appear them owl hoots are gonna show up in Dives today. Maybe that feller you saw was just some drifter.
Yeah, the day ain't over yet, Pearlie. I've still got this funny feeling down the back of my neck.
Shortly afterwards, Smoke ran across Marshal Earp and two of his deputies on Main Street. The three lawmen were walking around Dodge carrying shotguns, and one deputy had a Winchester rifle. Smoke had left Cal and Pearlie to watch the herd.
Well, no sign of any strangers or anything unusual going on. It seems real calm.
It does, for a fact.
Did you get your cattle sold?
Made a deal with Crawford Long from the Chicago Beef Company just now. As soon as the bank opens, I'll draw my money and we'll be headed back home.
Just be on the safe side. I'm putting a deputy at the front door of both banks, armed with shotguns and pistols, while I keep moving around with an eye out for strangers.
Good idea. My men are down at the cow pens keeping an eye on things until my business with Long is finished.
Can your cowboys shoot?
Well, I was about to ask you the same thing about these two deputies.
I'd say they're fair hands with the gun.
As Smoke was about to leave the marshal, he happened to spot a pair of cowboys riding along the railroad tracks, coming from the east, still almost a mile away.
Here comes a pair of newcomers. Maybe they're just passing through, but it wouldn't hurt to keep an eye on them until we know what they're up to.
We get saddle tramps passing through all the time, and there ain't but two. No sign of that big bunch the drummer told us about.
They might come in quiet, in twos and threes. It'll pay to watch them.
You got a suspicious nature, Mr. Jensen.
It's what's kept me alive all these years, Marshal.
Smoke strode off down a side street, a knot forming in his gut, telling him something was about to go wrong. At a corner where he had a view of open land to the east, he stopped long enough to watch those two riders approaching Dodge by following the rails.
Unusual.
Playing a hunch, Smoke walked back a dozen paces and slipped into an alley, running between rows of buildings in the business district. As it was early, shadows offered him a place to stay out of sight. Pausing near the back wall of a harness shop, he rested against the boards, waiting, holding his rifle down beside his leg. A quarter of an hour later, one of the cowboys he'd seen reined his horse into the alleyway. He stopped his mount, gave a look toward the rooftop above his head, and drew a rifle, stepping to the ground, tying off his brown gelding to a rain gutter. The stranger looked both ways up and down the alley. Then he pushed an empty flour barrel against the building and began climbing up on the roof.
He's covering the street.
There wasn't time to alert Pearly or Cal or Marshall Earp to what was going on. Smoke crept up behind the man on the balls of his feet, pulling his gleaming Arkansas toothpick from a sheath inside his right boot. The cowboy's rifle lay beside him, next to his battered Stetson.
How's it going, partner?
The square-jawed man whirled around, clawing for a pistol he had buckled to his waist, his eyes round with surprise. Smoke took off and rounded the corner at a dead run, aiming for Main Street. He saw Marshall Earp standing next to a hitch rail with his face turned northward.
Marshall!
Earp wheeled. He saw Smoke coming toward him.
What the hell? Where'd you get all that blood on your sleeve?
One of those strangers we saw following the tracks in a Dodge was about to climb up on the roof yonder with a rifle. I'm guessing he's going to cover this street while the bank's being robbed.
Look, I see a dust cloud coming. Takes plenty of horses to kick up so much dust.
They're coming for the bank, whoever it is. There's one more of them somewhere on a rooftop. Tell your deputies to get to cover. And you'd better do the same.
Damn! The Cattleman's Bank just opened. I'd better warn them to close the safe and get to a safe place.
If it's as many as Grimes said there was, no place is going to be safe, Marshal. Tell them to lay down on the floor behind something while I find that other owl hoot who's going to cover the street from a roof somewheres.
Son of a bitch! Here it is, a goddamn bank robbery in Dodge. And I've got just two green deputies.
I'll help all I can, Marshal.
Smoke broke into a run, turning down another side street to reach an alley across from the smaller Dodge City Savings Bank further down the road. Harley Suggins took a drink of whiskey and set the bottle down beside him, removing his sweat-stained Confederate cavalry hat to peek over the wood front of Martha's Eatery. He'd been very careful crossing the roof so as not to make noise that would alert anyone inside. He put his Henry repeating rifle by his side, then rose up on his elbows to see what was happening on the street below. He saw a sign reading the Dodge City Savings Bank, and he quickly lowered his head. He had a perfect view of the front, which would allow him to kill anyone who challenged Jack Starr or any of his men when they went inside for the robbery, and of far more importance, to cover them when they came out. Just then, he thought he heard the whisper of feet behind him, although he knew that wasn't possible. That was fire. He was hidden up on a roof. No one had seen him climb up that pile of wooden crates at a back corner. Harley glanced over his shoulder, merely to satisfy himself that it was his imagination. What he saw made his blood run cold. A towering giant of a man loomed above him, a bloody Arkansas toothpick in one hand and a pistol in the other.
Let me guess. You came up here with that rifle to go bird hunting. I've heard it's a good time of year for white-winged doves.
I was gonna fix a leak in this roof, honest.
I never met a man who fixed leaky roofs with a rifle and a bottle of whiskey.
Smoke saw dust rising above hills south of Dodge as he wiped blood off his toothpick on the dead man's pants leg.
Coming from two directions.
Smoke wheeled in a crouch to hurry back across the rooftop and to climb down to the alley. He dropped to the ground, took off in a run, rounding a corner where he spied Earp on Main Street, positioning Deputy Cody Wade in front of the Dodge City Savings Bank.
Get everybody inside! Another bunch is coming from the south!
Son of a bitch! Two bunches! Cody, you and Jim Bob start yelling for everybody to take cover inside someplace. I'll tell both bankers to close their safes and get to cover. This is gonna be a war, Cody, and I want you and Jim Bob inside one of these buildings so you don't get shot all to pieces.
I'll go fetch my men. We'll get up on the rooftops like they aim to do and shoot down at them.
Smoke ran hard until he sighted Pearly and Cal at a corral fence. Both men were looking at the dust rising from hills south of town.
Bring your rifles. Hurry it up. Trouble's coming.
Is that the big gang Grimes told us about?
Looks like it. You boys get extra boxes of shells for my gear,
and climb up on one of them roofs with a false front, so you'll have some protection from a bullet. I'll get on that roof across from the savings bank. The minute any shooting starts, be damn sure you aim for a bank robber. Don't take no chances if you can't be sure your target is one of them.
Lordy, I knew this wasn't gonna be no peaceful trip.
So did I, right after that bay throwed me off.
Get going! Bring me some spare shells and we'll pick up the best places where you can shoot.
As Pearly and Cal took off for the hotel, Smoke saw Crawford Long heading into the Cattleman's Bank.
Find some cover, Mr. Long! Me and the Marshal think there's a gang of bank robbers headed this way. Stay out of sight till it's over. We'll conduct our cow business soon as we can settle this.
Right!
Long made a fast turn away from the bank, hurrying as quickly as his chubby little legs could move down the sidewalk, entering a smaller hotel named the Palace with his coattails fluttering in the breeze.
Everyone, get off the streets!
Don't ask questions! Just do what we tell you! Get off the streets!
Women and children and men of every description made dashes for doorways on either side of Main Street. Cal burst out of the hotel, cradling extra boxes of cartridges against his chest. Smoke took a box of shells as Marshal Earp trotted up with his shotgun. Pearly came out of the Drover's Hotel.
I'll get back up on the roof of Martha's Eatery, on account it gives me the best view of the Dodge City Bank. I want you and Pearly across the street, and get up where you can cover the front of the Cattlemen's. And watch your backsides when the shooting starts, so nobody can slip up behind you. We'll have them caught in a crossfire when they ride into town. If they don't know we're ready for them, maybe we can drop a good-sized handful before they get the wiser.
But what about our steers, boss?
Oh, they ain't after cows, Pearly. They've come for the money we aim to get for our herd, and every cent that's in the bank, boss, besides. We ain't gonna let them ride in and take the profit out of a year's worth of ranching and sugarloaf. As soon as the first shot gets fired, start killing outlaws. Only remember to stay down so you don't wind up dead or wounded.
Pearly and Cal hurried across the street as the dust of the north and south grew thicker, moving closer rapidly. In minutes, the gang would be in sight.
I'll take up position inside my office along with Cody, so we'll have a good view of the street in both directions. I told Jim Bob to hide behind that brick wall next to the blacksmith shop. He's got plenty of ammunition, and he don't have to be all that good a shot using a double scatter gun.
Just keep your heads down. I'll get as many as I can. Maybe move around a bit if they find cover in town instead of pulling out.
I sure hope you're as good with the gun as Jim Bob said you was, Mr. Jensen. We're gonna need all the help we can get.
Smoke took off, his mind focused on what was to come. He figured a battle was about to be waged in the streets of Dodge City. He was any judge of such matters. He could feel it coming as he ran into the alley to make the climb to the roof of Martha's Eatery. He found the dead outlaw just where he had left him, a few feet behind the false front of the building. Blood encircled the corpse, and already the blowflies were feeding on it, buzzing over the body in a swirling black cloud. Ignoring the green-backed flies, Smoke took off his hat and rested against the wood in front of the building, only his eyes visible above the boards where a sign was painted with the words, "The Best Grub in Dodge." There was nothing he could do now but wait and see what kind of move the bank robbers made when they hit town. It would depend on how experienced they were, how much savvy they had. In the back of his mind, he wondered if this bunch could be led by Bloody Bill Anderson. Lewis had been so sure the report that Anderson had been killed in Missouri many years ago, not long after the war was over. Smoke found himself with a nagging feeling of doubt until he decided it really didn't matter either way. He'd been up against men with tall reputations before, and most of them had turned out to be ordinary men who died just as quickly as nameless gents with guns. The trick was to be the first with a bullet in a critical spot. Something Smoke had learned before he was old enough to shave. He'd had one hell of a good teacher, too. A mountain man who understood the business of living and dying better than anyone he'd ever known. He thought of his promise then to Sally the day they left the ranch with the herd, to swing wide of trouble whenever he was able. She'd understand this sudden turn of events. How could he have known a gang of bank robbers had planned to strike Dodge City at the same time they arrived to sell their steers? It was purely luck of the draw, a coincidence. Peering above the boards now, he could see the riders, more than a dozen heading for Dodge at an easy trot from the north. to the south, where more hills stretched out to the horizon. All they could see was dust thickening, like storm clouds moving over Kansas prairies. Brushing blowflies away from his face, he studied the men riding toward town. By being watchful, paying attention to things out of the ordinary, he'd been able to kill two of them before the robbery attempt had begun. Like so many parts of his nature that were regular habits, he'd learned this watchfulness from Preacher. As Smoke gazed south, a line of horsemen appeared below the dust, maybe 14 or 15 men spread out in a ragged line. It was plain that these riders were after something, splitting into two groups and arriving at the same time. Keeping his rifle barrel hidden behind the planks so that sunlight wouldn't reflect off it, giving him away, he settled in.
There's gonna be a lot of blood spilled here.
The most important factor in evening the odds against him would be to wait until all the robbers were in range. If anyone fired a shot too early, the raiders would be warned and their plans might change. If they spread out across the town, killing and looting, Smoke and his cowboys and Earp and his deputies would stand little chance of thinning the outlaws' ranks.
Here they come!
Goddamn greenhorn deputy.
Smoke raised his head slightly above the top of the roof.
Stay quiet! We don't want them to know we're ready!
Hidden in the shadow that was cast by the false front of Martha's Eatery, Smoke could lean away from the boards to get a view of the riders coming from the south. When he slitted his eyes to dim the sun's glare, he saw a man riding at the front, wearing an old Confederate cavalry officer's hat and a gray tunic.
Damn near every Southern soldier's got parts of an old rebel uniform.
Smoke could also make out the rifles and shotguns these men were carrying. The gang picked up speed, urging their horses to a lope as they neared the outskirts of town. Smoke raised his Winchester to his shoulder, keeping the muzzle low and out of sight.
Welcome to Dodge, Mr. Bloody Bill Anderson, or whoever the hell you are. We've got a little surprise waiting for you.
The men rode past small houses and shacks at the edge of the business district. Raiders coming from the north were entering from the other side of town. Smoke drew back out of sight behind the planks. The blast came from the edgy deputy of Earp's.
Damn!
It was impossible to tell who was doing the shooting, although it was clear the shots came from the street and buildings on both sides. Smoke found the target, a man on a rearing horse with a rifle in his hand. A scattergun exploded from a window of the marshal's office, sending another raider plunging off his horse with his face a red mass of pulpy tissue and blood. A storekeeper ran out on the porch in front of Burns' hat and boot shop, shouldering a long barrel goose gun, taking aim at the first rider to come up Main Street from the south. He did not see the raider coming up from behind. Henry Burns was torn from his feet, his shopkeeper's apron shredded by shotgun pellets, bloodied when a full charge struck him in the chest and face. His goose gun flew from his hands as he toppled off the porch. Smoke wondered why the hell anyone would run out to face a gang as large as this, armed only with a hunting gun. Some would call it courage, but Smoke classed it as stupidity when the odds were so long. Suddenly, the leader of the raiders spurred his horse into a full-tilt charge, headed for the front of the Cattleman's Bank at top speed, his men spurring their mounts behind him. One of the raiders fired a sawed-off shotgun into a storefront window. Smoke raised his head and shoulders above the false front of the cafe, aiming for the leader of the bunch aboard a racing sorrel gelding. His sights came to rest on the center of the man's gray Confederate tunic when fate took a hand. The sorrel stumbled, then quickly regained its footing just as another raider on a chestnut moved between the leader and Smoke. The bearded bandit atop the chestnut jolted when Smoke slugged past through it. He teetered dangerously in the saddle and then fell off to one side, where he was trampled by running horses behind him, his limp body twisting and turning every time a flying hoof struck him. Pistols and rifles fired up at the roof of Martha's place then, forcing Smoke to duck for cover. The element of surprise was gone for Smoke and all the others trying to defend the town and its banks. Things would quickly settle into a game of hide and seek. with death as a reward for the loot. Moving on his haunches, Smoke crept to another spot on the roof as guns opened up across the road. Answering fire came from the street until the air was filled with the noise made by dozens of pounding guns. Now and then, a stray bullet would strike the storefront where Smoke was hit. Some glancing off, others becoming embedded in sun-warped plank. Smoke was too wary to rise up again until the time was right. He'd have been a fool to have made a target of himself. The time was soon going to come when the fully loaded guns in the raiders' hands were empty. And then, Smoke would make each shot count from his perch above the cafe. A lessening in the booming gunfire brought Smoke's head up, and he turned his Winchester on a man in a stained leather vest leading a pair of pack horses. The cowboy flew forward over the pommel of his saddle, diving head first toward the ground with a pistol still clamped in his fist. Smoke ducked just in time to escape a hail of bullets coming from the street when some of the raiders had heard his gun. Suddenly, smashing glass at the front of the Dodge City Savings Bank forced Smoke to peek over the flanks again. Three robbers were down off their horses, shooting out the bank's front windows with shotguns. Smoke watched the outlaws rushing in, climbing over a brick ledge that had once supported big panes of glass. He couldn't see what was going on inside, but suddenly, the shooting abruptly ended.
They're inside. They'll kill everyone in the bank or take some as hostages. We're badly outgunned.
Smoke counted the bodies of five bank robbers sprawled in the dust and dirt. One wounded outlaw was crawling towards safety behind a water trough, leaving a trail of red in his wake. The leader of the gang was nowhere in sight. Suddenly, more guns thundered in the front of the cattleman's bank as more robbers tried to shoot their way in. Smoke heard Cal open up with his rifle, and Smoke backed away from the edge of the roof to move again to the far side of the cafe in order to keep the gunmen who were in the road guessing where he was. Inching across the roof, he couldn't help thinking about what must be going on inside the Dodge City Savings Bank, where hapless citizens of the town had made mistakes at doing their banking business that morning. Smoke was positive that members of the gang would be smart enough to take hostages, probably women, believing that no one would take a shot at him if the women were used as human shields. He came to the corner and glanced over a breastwork of planks to see what was going on.
"You're badly outgunned."
Smoke spotted loose horses trailing their reins and galloping in every direction. Some of the raiders were on foot now, making them easier to stalk, easier to kill when he came down off the roof to go after them one or two at a time. One thing was in their favor. He and his cowboys and Earp and his deputies had been as ready as they could be for the robbery, behind cover with plenty of ammunition. Things would likely have been over already had it been otherwise. But the truth was, the fight to save Dodge City's money was far from being won or lost. It was a pitched battle, and it was one-sided as hell. But Smoke had not begun to thin the robbers' ranks as he planned to do when the opportunity came. A heavy-bodied raider jumped off his nervous brown mare to make a run for the broken front windows of the bank. He stood at a hitch rail to tie his horse in front of the building just long enough for Smoke to draw bead on his head.
Gotcha.
Smoke was barely ahead of answering fire from the street below. Suddenly, his senses warned him before his ringing ears actually heard the sound behind him. Whirling around, he was just in time to fire at a head that was peering over the back of the rooftop.
Shit! Time to move.
Bent over in a crouch, he ran to the back of the cafe, only to find another gun slick staring up at him. Smoke swung over the eave and let himself down slowly with his rifle tucked between his knees. Instinct kept him still for a moment until he was certain no one was watching from either end of the alley. On nothing but a hunch, he ran north toward the rear of the harness shop. At the corner leading into a side street, he paused to look and listen, getting his bearings, when he caught a glimpse of a rider spurring relentlessly away from the battle that was raging from one end of Dodge City to the other. A bandit wearing a Confederate infantryman's cap urged his horse to greater speed, looking back over his shoulder with a revolver gripped in his fist.
Drop the gun! Leave your friends, but you ain't taking any guns with you.
The outlaw whirled in the saddle to face the voice he heard, and just as quickly, he swung his pistol in Smoke's direction.
I warned you!
A woman in a blue ankle-length dress tried to escape out a side door of Brown's Bakery at a corner on the far side of Main. One of the raiders fired his pistol from atop a prancing horse, shooting her in the back before he spurred out of sight. Sudden rage filled Smoke when he saw that woman go down. It was time to send these yellow bastards a message. Bill Anderson ducked into the Dodge City Savings Bank with a pistol in his right hand and a twin-barreled sawed-off shotgun in his left. Lee, Sonny, and Dewey were positioned behind a polished oak counter next to the door of a massive safe. Lee held a gun to the head of a trembling, balding man in front of the vault, obviously the banker in charge of things. The vault was closed. Sonny had a woman in front of him, his fingers wound into her long, dark hair so that her head was pulled back. Her palms were raised and they shook uncontrollably. Outside the bank at a hitch rail, a gunman called Lucky held both nervous pack horses, trying to calm them down in the midst of all the shooting, while staying hunkered down himself to be out of the line of fire while Dewey and the others were inside the bank.
He won't open it, Bill! I swore I'd kill some bitch if he didn't!
Bill noticed two bodies on the floor. Farmer dressed in overalls surrounded by blood, and an elderly woman in a faded calico dress, her deeply wrinkled face pockmarked by shotgun pellet wounds, oozing more blood onto waxed hardwood flooring.
What's your name?
Feakin. David Feakin.
You know the combination to that safe?
No. Yes. But I won't open it. The money belongs to the townspeople of Dodge City.
Then I'm gonna have to kill you and dynamite your vault. Or I can shoot this pretty lady here, Mr. Feegan.
Ah!
You watch her die, and then I'll give you one last chance to open your vault. You ever see a woman die from a bullet hole right before your very eyes? There'll be this big hole plumb through her, and her blood's gonna run all over this here floor. She'll scream real loud right at first, and then she'll make softer noises after she falls on the floor. Her blood's gonna be on your hands, Feegan, unless you open that goddamn safe right now.
Dear God, you wouldn't simply execute her, would you?
I sure will, Mr. Banker, unless you open that damn iron box real quick.
What the hell was that? See what it was, Dewey.
Dewey stepped cautiously to a shattered window. He stood still for a moment, peering out.
It's Jack and Sam and a few more boys. They just shot their way into that bank up the street. Yonder, some kid, maybe 14 or so, running with his hands covering his bloody face. Appears he caught a face full of buckshot. Acts like he's blind. He just fell over a water trough outside and he can't stand up no more.
Dewey gave the south end of Maine a closer examination.
Somebody must have shot old Claude, because the pack horse and that mule is wandering loose, dragging lead ropes. There's sure a bunch of dead folks laying all over the place.
May the Lord have mercy on us. Please don't kill any more people. Order your men to stop shooting, and I'll open the safe.
Damn! Roy just shot a woman in the back of her head. She was trying to run from that store across from the bank. I swear, if it don't look like Roy shot her head plumb off. I didn't know he was gonna kill women folk this time.
Please, ask him to stop. You can have all the money. Please, don't kill anyone else.
Start twisting that dial. Soon as it's open, maybe I'll think about having my men stop shooting. The longer you wait, the more folks is gonna die.
Feegan began working the combination dial on the front of the safe.
What happened? It's too quiet out there.
Bill looked as a man stood up behind the false front of a bullet-riddled cafe called Martha's Eatery, hoisting what appeared to be a lifeless body over his head. Demonstrating tremendous strength, the man threw the body over the wood in front of the building and then disappeared.
God damn, that's Harley! That son of a bitch went and killed Harley Suggins!
That is Harley! Harley was about the most careful feller I ever knowed in my whole life. How the hell did anybody get up on that roof behind him without him knowing it? Harley could hear a damn sewing needle drop.
He's damn sure dead. He ain't so much as moving muscle.
Bill Anderson's jaw clamped. He looked up at the rooftop of the cafe.
When do you go and find that half-breed scout, Scarface? Tell Scarface to hunt down that son of a bitch who killed Harley and bring me his goddamn scalp. Tell that breed the bastards up on the roof yonder. Run and fetch that breed, Dewey, and tell him what I said. While you're out there, have somebody grab up the pack mule and that horse so we can haul our loot out of the cattleman's bank.
What about Claude?
Who cares about Claude? Get going!
Dewey stepped carefully over a low windowsill and turned up the street, hunkered down with his gun aimed in front of him, not taking any chances that a stray bullet might hit him. Bill turned back to Feegan, fighting the fury he felt inside for losing a good man like Harley Suggins, one of the few people in his band he truly trusted. Harley had been with him since the war, and he'd always carried his share of the load.
Get that safe open, or you'll be the next sumbitch lying out there in the road dead as a fence post.
Feegan's fingers quivered, turning the dial, as Bill wondered who the brazen bastard was who tossed Harley's body down to the street. That was an act of outright defiance. That was a man who needed to be taught manners. The sound made Bill grin.
There we go. That's Sykes. Still up there gunning down resistance. Losing Harley ain't good news, but we got another expert marksman firing from a good position, keeping any lawman in town pinned down.
Bill looked at Feegan, and his fire returned.
Hurry up! I must have gotten part of the combination wrong. It won't open. I'll have to try again.
Lee, give Mr. Feegan a reminder of what'll happen if he gets it wrong again.
Right.
Lee drew back his pistol and whacked the banker on the top of his head.
God damn, Lee, why the hell'd you hit him so hard? We ain't never gonna get that money till he wakes up.
Oh, shit. Sorry. I'll slap his face till he come around.
I got no use for a man who's too damn stupid to know what to do.
Sonny flinched when he saw Bill shoot Lee through the head, but he held his tongue when Bill glared at him.
Sonny, ask the bitch real nice if she wants to live. If she opens that safe, I'll spare her life. Otherwise, we're gonna kill her right here and now.
You heard what Bill said. Open it, we'll kill you.
I don't know. I swear before God, I do not know how to open it.
You want I should shoot her?
Well, let's try to wake this bastard up. This is taking way too long. We should already be headed out of town by now. Put the bitch on the floor and find a pitcher of water. There's gotta be some water around here someplace.
Sonny stalked off to locate a pitcher of water. He came back a few moments later as Bill was listening to the slackening gunshots up and down Main Street. A sure sign that Dodge City's lawmen were already dead, or pulling back when they saw that the odds were against them.
Here's some water.
Wake up, you son of a bitch!
What happened?
You went to sleep. Now get up and open that safe or I'll kill the woman yonder. And you better make it quick, too.
No, please don't kill Miss Peabody. She doesn't deserve to die. She's only an employee of the bank.
She is gonna die unless you get this open.
I'm doing the best I can.
While Feegan twisted the lock, Bill sauntered over near one of the front windows, glancing up at the roof of Martha's Eatery. It was all he could do to control himself in his blinding rage as he looked at Harley's body lying in the street. Gunshots were fewer now in Dodge, and he consoled himself with that fact. They had taken the town by storm, and soon they would empty every pocket in the entire place by cleaning out the two vaults.
He got it! It's open! Damn! We're gonna need some help getting all this money outside into them packs!
Bill saw Scarface trotting down the boardwalk in front of a small harness shop. He ignored Sonny for a moment, going to the window to catch the half-breed's eye with a wave. When Scarface saw him, he came to a halt. Bill pointed to the roof of Martha's Eatery. Scarface gave a nod in return and headed down a side street toward an alleyway.
Lucky, tie him off and get in here to help us load this money. Most of the shooting stopped anyhow.
Outside, Scarface turned into the alley with a bowie knife gleaming in one hand and a Colt pistol in the other. Bill's face broke out into a grin with no humor behind it.
That'll teach a sumbitch, whoever he is, not to tangle with Bloody Bill Anderson.
In his office, Wyatt knelt beside the remnants of a window, being very careful when he peered over the sill to see what was going on at the cattleman's bank. Cody lay on the floor, his left shoulder seeping blood around the bandana Wyatt had tied over his wound. For several minutes, Cody had been unable to shoot, in a state of mild shock after the bullet had grazed his flesh, peeling his skin open so it looked like a gash made by a knife.
I'm seeing stars, Marshal. Feels like I'm gonna faint.
You'll be okay.
The shooting had all but stopped on Main Street. Half a dozen bandits were inside the bank. Three more were outside, hidden behind stone water troughs with rifles and shotguns. And all seemed lost. There weren't enough guns in Dodge to halt a bank-robbing gang of this size, and with the corpses of innocent women and the Wilkins boys lying in the road and spreading pools of blood, it was unlikely that any civic-minded citizen would rush to their aid with hunting rifles or shotguns. Henry Burns lay dead in front of his store. The bodies of four outlaws lay farther to the south, although one appeared to be alive, barely able to crawl, trying to reach safety. He wondered about Jim Bob. Watley's shotgun had been silent for several minutes. Every now and then, one of Jensen's cowhands would fire a shot at a robber from a rooftop. Neither man seemed to be much of a marksman.
Jesus, this hurts! Oh, wish I could get over to Doc Sanders' house.
Ain't no back door.
Suddenly, coming from the north, a bandit came down the street, leading a horse and a mule bearing pack saddles. Wyatt raised his shotgun over the windowsill and thumbed back both hammers, determined to stop the pack animals from hauling off the money if he could. But the bandit walked between the pair of animals, using them as shields, preventing Wyatt from taking a shot that wouldn't harm the four-legged creatures.
Hellfire! I can't shoot them without hurting the horse or the mule. I reckon I ought to shoot them anyways, so they can't carry off the money. Yeah, seems a damn shame.
The shot came from a rooftop up the street, kicking up a cloud of dust in front of the bandit who was leading the animals. And at the same time, the shotgun blast came from Jim Bob's position behind the wall at Joe's blacksmith shop. The mule lunged forward as shotgun pellets struck its rump. It jerked the lead rope free of the bandit's hand and took off down Main Street at a gallop. The bandit quickly put himself behind the plunging, rearing bay pack horse, trying to settle it so he would be safe standing behind it. Two men rushed out of the bank with rifles before the horse calmed down. One raider took aim at Jim Bob's hiding place. That shot came from a rooftop. One bandit staggered and went down on one knee, dropping his rifle to grip his right thigh muscles. Wyatt wasted no time. Wyatt ducked down just in time.
Gonna get killed, Wyatt. He's gonna storm this jail, and then we're done for.
It'd be a help if you got up and fired out of one of these windows once in a while. Two guns are sure as hell better than one. You ain't hurt so bad you can't shoot, and it might discourage him from rushing us.
I'm scared, Marshal. Oh, no sense denying it. I'm scared I'm gonna die.
Shoot at him every once in a while, and then get back down out of sight. It ain't over yet. That big feller Jensen has killed the hell out of four or five. He just tossed one off the roof at Martha's. Jensen may be every bit as mean as you said he was. He damn sure don't act like he's scared of nothing.
Wyatt fell silent when he saw an engine dressed in buckskin leggings and a sleeveless vest hurrying across a corner farther up Main. The redskin wore a derby hat with a feather stuck in the hat band, and he was carrying a long knife and a pistol.
Oh, looks like they sent somebody after Jensen. He'll be headed to that alley behind the cafe so he can climb up to where he's got a shot at Jensen. No telling how many of them Jensen's killed. Sure don't seem there's near so many robbers as there was when they rode in. Now, Jensen must be a quiet feller on his feet to be so big.
Jensen used to be one bad hombre, Marshal. Sundance Morgan and his gang wasn't no bunch of greenhorns. I heard later on that Jensen killed damn near every one of them before it was over. Maybe Jensen's a little older now, but I still wouldn't care to tangle with him. Sure as hell am glad he's on our side.
him and his two cowboys. Only ain't likely to be enough. I counted damn near 30 men riding into town a while ago. Oh, to my way of thinking, we don't stand a chance against so many. Not even with Smoke Jensen siding with us.
Wyatt took a quick look at the cattleman's bank before pulling back.
The real tough part is going to be when they try to ride out of here with the money. We'll have to kill as many as we can without being killed ourselves. Maybe scare them into leaving some of the money behind. With Jensen and his man shooting down from the roofs, and Jim Bob doing the best he can along with the two of us, well, maybe we can make a difference. That is, if that damn engine don't get Jensen first with that knife or the gun.
You see an engine with him?
At least a half-blood. He's wearing this old derby hat with the feather in it and deerskin leggings. I saw this big scar down the side of his face.
Cody pointed to a wanted poster that was fluttering in a soft wind that was coming through the broken window panes.
Oh, holy cow, Marshal! Oh, that'll be a gent they call Scarface Parker! Huh? We got his reward poster last month, if you'll remember. Came from the U.S. Marshal's office over in Fort Smith on the train, along with a handful of others. He's wanted for murder in Indian Territory. Seems like that poster said he was half Pawnees, as it said he'd be armed and dangerous to catch. That he killed two deputy marshals from ambush while they was on his trail someplace down in the nations.
It don't make a damn who he is, Cody. Right now he's got a knife and a gun. And he's headed for the roof where Jensen tossed down that body. Could be we're about to find out if Mr. Smoke Jensen is as dangerous as you say he is. If the engine I saw is this Scarface Parker.
He won't be no match for Jensen, Marshal. If Jensen's the same man he used to be.
Time's gonna tell. Well, they got one pack horse tied to the rail over yonder. Best we can do is shoot any son of a bitch who comes out carrying bags of money. Smoke Jensen'll have to take care of himself. Gosh, Jim Bob couldn't hit the side of a barn. I wish we had one or two more men who could shoot straight.
It ain't so much that my aim is bad, Marshal. I'm just afraid of dying is all. I got two kids to feed. Beth wouldn't know what to do for money if I wasn't here to help her raise them up like I'm supposed to, being their daddy.
I understand, Cody. Just do the best you can. The more lead we throw at him, even if it ain't all that true, will be a help.
Oh, my arm's hurting something awful.
Wyatt let it drop then, bending his head around an edge of the window frame to see what was going on.
Lordy, whoever this bunch of outlaws is, they sure as hell bad men.
I figured we just had a visit by Bloody Bill Anderson, even though some folks believe he's been dead since the war. It's just a guess, but it looks like we've got proof on our hands that Bloody Bill is still alive, robbing and killing just like he used to. It would explain what happened to Dave Cobbs and his family down at the trading post the other day. It was easy to see that store was looted before they burned it plumb to the ground, and they killed Cobbs and his whole family so there wouldn't be no witnesses alive to talk, to tell who done it.
Beth's been telling me all along I hadn't ought to took this job. She said I could find work at the shipping pens during the trail drive season, and that we live off what we could grow in our garden between times. Right about now, I sure do wish I'd listened a little bit closer to what she was saying.
It's too late for regrets now, Cody. Just keep your head down and shoot as careful as you can when there's a target. If we're careful, we'll make it out of this alive.
I ain't so sure, Marshal. When it comes to luck, mine ain't been all that good usually.
Oh, maybe the other bunch is coming out of the Dodge City Savings Bank.
Wyatt risked yet another quick look around the window frame. He saw another body lying near a brown mare that was tied in front of the bank owned by David Fegan, and several more horses, two with pack saddles tied out front.
Maybe Jensen got another one.
What was it? Did they shoot somebody else?
There's a body in front of Mr. Fegan's bank. But it could have been there all along. The gent wasn't moving.
No telling how many bodies we're going to find when this is over. If we're alive after it's over to make it count. I know Beth's at home, worried to death hearing all this shooting. Oh, she'll be crying, figuring I was the first one to get killed.
Then she'll be twice as glad to see you when you get home.
Why had wondered about the engine, if it was truly Scarface Parker, and what the hell would happen when the man ran into the tall cowman from Colorado, unless the gunshot they had just heard meant that Jensen was already dead. Cat-like, moving on the balls of his feet, Smoke stepped across to another rooftop, bending low to keep from being seen from the street. Every instinct he had was sharpened, keened by anger over the senseless killing of women and the boy who was blinded by buckshot. It was not uncommon for men who had bad intentions to kill or maim others who could defend themselves in a contest with weapons. But when cold-blooded murder occurred, with the victims being women and children, killing for the sake of killing alone, Smoke couldn't bridle his temper, no matter what kind of promise he'd given Sally. And as he moved farther away from the cafe roof, he was sure someone would be coming after him. Throwing the body down where every bank robber in the gang could see it was a form of challenge that men who believed they were tough couldn't ignore. And with that in mind, Smoke was certain he had lured one or two more outlaws up on the roofs on the east side of Main Street, men who had been sent to hunt him down and kill him. In the fit of rage he found himself in now, he was looking forward to this contest with more anticipation than he had experienced in years. Like in the old times, when killing was little more than a day's work. He crept to the rear of a roof over a narrow building in between the cafe and a cobbler's shop, looking cautiously into the alley, because it was from the alleyway that manhunters would be most likely to come.
Come on up, boys.
Smoke knew he had to be back in a good firing position with a view of Maine when the robbers tried to make a getaway with their loot. While this wasn't Smoke's natural range, being caught inside a town without mountains or trees or underbrush to give him cover from enemy fire, he knew lawless men well enough. He glanced up and down the alley, finding nothing, yet his senses told him someone was there. Two bloody bodies lay behind the cafe, but that was not the reason for his concern. A voice inside his head warned that someone was coming for him, a man he couldn't see at present. He walked quietly over to an eave of the building and lay down, resting his Winchester beside him as he drew his Arkansas toothpick. This was likely to be a job requiring a silent kill, a job for a knife. Then a shadow moved farther south down the alley, near the spot where he'd killed the two robbers who tried to come up on the roof after him. A pair of horses still stood ground hitched near the bodies of both men, a piebald gelding reacting to the scent of blood puddling around one of the corpses. Smoke's eyes narrowed, fixed on the shape he saw moving a moment before. There it was, the faint outline of a man in a derby hat staying close to the rear of a building. Even in the slanted sunlight of early morning, Smoke saw the glint of a knife blade in the man's hand.
So, it's gonna be a duel of steel and nerves.
One factor would force the fight to be short and sweet. In minutes, perhaps even now, the gang of bank robbers would be attempting a break with the town's money tied to pack saddles. Frozen, evidence in the patience preacher taught him so long ago, Smoke waited for the shadowy stalker to make his next move. In most any form of combat, the one who struck first had a better chance of victory, in particular when the battle was fought with guns, but in a fist fight or even a war with knives, too. But when there was a game of cat and mouse, a stalker and his prey, it was often best to be patient, waiting for the right opportunity. The man who moved first gave his position away. Time seemed to stand still. Smoke watched the figure in the alley, remaining motionless. He could see the shape of a feather protruding from the man's hat band.
An Indian. He'll be careful.
The shadow moved again, inching down the back of one building and then another, coming closer to the spot below the roof where Smoke was hidden.
A little bit more.
The man in the derby was within easy rifle range now, yet the movement of a barrel in sunlight might alert him to the danger.
We're coming out, and we got prisoners, women. Any sumbitch shoots, we'll blow these bitches to pieces.
Time was running short. Smoke needed to be back facing Main Street with his rifle ready in order to stand any chance of saving the women and Dodge City's money. but there was that engine to be dealt with first, creeping toward him where shadows hid his progress.
God damn it! I warned you! Just to show you we mean business, we're gonna shoot one of these here women and shove her out where everybody can see her!
Oh my God!
Those bastards!
Smoke had wasted too much goddamn time waiting for the engine in the Derby to make his move. Slipping his rifle forward until it rested against his left shoulder, the offside he avoided when firing a rifle, Smoke pulled the hammer back on the Winchester as silently as he knew how.
You dirty sons of bitches! Any yellow bastard who shoot a woman like that ought to be hung!
Come and try and hang us! You'll be the next one to die!
Smoke could not wait any longer. He sighted along the barrel of his rifle, and then he did something he rarely ever allowed. He pulled the trigger on a man first. The man in the Derby jumped, both feet leaving the ground before he fell over on his back. Smoke ran across the roof, bent over like a man in pain until he had a view of Main Street. He levered a fresh cartridge into his rifle, certain that the man lying in the alley was out of the fight forever. Jack Starr was worried. Three men defending Dodge City had good aim and iron nerves. One was in the marshal's office with a shotgun. Another was down the street, across from the Dodge City Bank, picking his shots carefully. And one more kept moving from rooftop to rooftop, the bastard who threw Harley Suggins down in front of the cafe. Jack had other concerns, too. Anderson had been wrong about the amount of resistance they would face in robbing the banks. Someone had known they were coming.
Go take a look outside, Sammy.
Jack was holding a Dance 44 beneath the trembling chin of a woman who was employed by the bank.
We've lost too many goddamn men already. Make sure nobody's out there and look real close up on them roofs across the street.
Jack could not have cared less if cross-eyed Sammy McCoy got shot peering outside. Claude, Sammy's brother, was a far better marksman, and his nerves were like ice. And Claude's brain was twice the size of Sammy's.
Somebody's liable to shoot me. If it's all the same to you, Jack, I'd just as soon not get shot taking a look outside.
I'm gonna kill you myself if you don't do like I say. You sure as hell ain't got near the balls your brother Claude has got.
Sammy swallowed hard. He saw bodies of his friends lying all over the street. Sammy knew Jack meant what he said, that he would kill him if he didn't follow orders. He wondered which was better, to be shot in the back by a member of his own gang or to die by another man's bullet. Winding up dead was the result, either way. He made up his mind that it didn't make all that much damn difference.
Do it!
Sammy went closer to the windowsill and looked out very cautiously.
Okay, sure as hell looks okay to me. Only there's two guys in the marshal's office who fire off shotguns every now and then. I wish there was some way for some of us to shut them shotguns up before we get killed.
Scarface Parker had stuck a knife in a banker's belly when he reached in a desk drawer for a small caliber pistol. The banker was losing a lot of blood now, and the vault was still closed. Jack turned to the woman he held by the back of her navy blue dress.
I'm gonna give you one more chance to open that goddamn safe, and if you don't do it, I swear I'll kill you.
No, no one else knows the combination.
You are lying. There has to be somebody else who knows the combination, and I figure that's got to be you. This is it, you bitch. You open the safe or I'm gonna blow your goddamn head off.
I swear I can't do it.
Then say your damn prayers, woman. Your body's gonna be filling a casket unless you open that vault right now. Oh, there's gonna be a funeral procession in Dodge tomorrow, and it's gonna be for you.
I can try. I think I remember the first numbers. 10, after 2 spins clockwise to clear the lock. Then I believe the next number is 18.
You get just this one chance. If it don't open, you're the same as dead, and you can count on that.
The woman put a shaky hand on the combination dial and spun it clockwise 2 times. Tears streamed down her slightly wrinkled cheeks.
I can't remember the last number. It may be 20. Oh, please don't kill me. When Mr. Herring wakes up, he'll tell you what you want to know if he doesn't bleed to death beforehand.
He shouldn't have gone for that gun. He was a damn fool to try that.
He won't refuse you now. Please give him a chance to tell me what the last number is.
Sammy, rouse that banker and ask him what the last number of the combination is. And if he don't give you no answer, then shoot the son of a bitch.
Somebody's moving outside. He ran across the road just now. It makes two of them behind that brick wall in front of that blacksmith shop, if I got them counted right.
Well, how come you didn't shoot the bastard?
Well, he was running real fast, and I seen he had a rifle.
You yelling, gotcha-eyed son of a bitch! If we weren't already short of men, I'd put a hole through you big enough to fit a man's fist!
Don't shoot me, Jack. I'll do whatever you say. I need my share of that money bad as you do.
Yeah, well, I ought to kill you anyway, Sammy. You ain't showed not one bit of backbone hide behind that window.
I'm just wanting to make sure I live to spend the money, Jack.
Where's Scarface, Frankie? He should have been back by now.
He went after that sumbitch up on the roof. Bill gave the order himself.
Jack wondered what was taking the half-breed so long to get a simple job done. Some local citizen with a rifle had gotten up on top of the cafe, probably catching Harley by surprise. Jack had never completely trusted Harley anyway. He was a suck-ass, shining up to Bill whenever he had the opportunity. Frankie stepped over to another broken pane of glass. He looked out for a moment.
If we use them pack animals as a kind of shield, we can get cleared out of here with the money without being shot all to hell.
First thing is to get our hands on the money. Now, if this woman don't open the door on this here vault, I'm gonna scatter her damn brains all over the front of it.
Oh, please don't shoot me. I'm doing the best I can.
It ain't good enough, because it ain't open yet.
Frankie kicked the wounded bank president in the stomach.
Oh, kick him again. Like Jack said, we're running out of time.
What's the last number of that combination?
22.
You heard him. Use 22 for the last number. And if this vault don't open, I'm sure going to put a bullet through you. That'll do it. Won't be needing you anymore, darling.
Jack pulled the safe door open. Sacks of currency and coin filled almost every shelf.
Start loading this stuff on them pack animals, boys. We are rich. Soon as the money's loaded, we're clearing out of here.